Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network in association with MSW Media. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Democratic strategist Simon Rosenberg. He always makes me feel good. I'm so glad he's here. There's lots to talk about, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Simon Rosenberg. Welcome back to the show, Simon.
It's good to be here, Kimberly. Thank you so much.
Of course, it's always good when you're here because you're optimistic and oh my God, I know I always say that when you're here, but it's so effing important. So I'm just going to roll with it. But I want to jump right in. I love your feed. I love everything about your messaging. It's wonderful. And for those of you who are not aware, Simon was one of the few who accurately predicted 2022 when we were hearing there was going to be a big red wave. Simon was like, no, I don't. These are not the numbers that I'm seeing. And so we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I just want to ask you, your pinned tweet right now, it says, I've endorsed 6 swing candidates in Virginia. If they win, we hold the Senate, flip the House. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, Virginia is a very, very important election. And there are lots of important elections in November, but I'm in my community, Hopium Chronicles, I've asked people who follow me and are engaged in the community I'm part of, to make a commitment to really make sure that we win in Virginia. We've had a great year. I mean, we had a great 2022. We've been winning elections all across the country, overperforming from Jacksonville up to Wisconsin, right? Mm-hmm. And in Colorado. But we need to end the year strong. This is the last election before the general election next year. And it's critical that we end on an upbeat and note. And right now, Virginia's really close. In the early vote, Republicans are doing a little bit better, I think, than we expected. It's not really surprising because Governor Youngkin has poured so much money in to the race, and we're starting to see the evidence of that investment that he's made. So they're performing a little bit better, and we just have to respond. And so what I've asked people to do is there are 6 races based on my consulting with people on the ground and the people running the races and the National Party and everybody else, that there are 6 races that if we win, we should be able to flip the House to Democrat and keep the Senate and have a real blow to Youngkin at a time where he's trying to become the next guy up, after Trump. And so this race is important for a few reasons. One is it blunts Youngkin, who is, could be a serious presidential candidate someday. Mm-hmm. Second is that, if we lose the state Senate, Virginia will have a trifecta, and it means that they'll pass a very restrictive abortion ban right away. And Virginia's the last state in the South that has where abortion is legal and unrestricted, and it will be devastating for the people of Virginia. Mm-hmm. And so to me, there's so many reasons why Virginia matters. And on my Hopium site, there are 6 candidates, 4 in the House, 2 in the Senate, that if they all win, we're going to have a very good election day. And the election's very close. They need more money. They need volunteers. We need to create more activity there to make sure we have the election we want to have.
When is that election?
What's that?
What date is the election?
So the election is November, it's November 7th, I think, but the early vote has begun. And so, if you end up volunteering, if you live in Virginia and you're listening, vote today, vote tomorrow. The earlier you vote, the more likely it is we win. When you vote early, what you're creating is you're allowing the campaigns to move on to lower propensity voters. And so in every election now, Democrats need to have a vote on day one strategy where we vote at the very beginning to allow the campaigns to move on to lower propensity voters, which creates more Democrats. And so if you live in Virginia, you know, vote right away. Don't wait. Don't wait till election day. Don't wait till the final weekend. Second is, if you want to help in Virginia, do it now. Don't wait. We need to drive the vote now. We're a little behind where we want to be, and we need to catch up. We can't play games here. I mean, we have the power and the tools to catch up, get ahead, but it only if we all go do the work. And so early vote has begun by giving money, by volunteering. You're just calling Democrats. I mean, this is all about just turning out Democrats. This is not complicated. All these districts are Biden districts. Yeah. You know, Biden won all these districts. And so we just need, if you make calls, if you text, if you canvass, you're just going to be talking to Democrats. It's the easiest kind of work that we do together, which is why I hope people will join me in really laying their body down here for Virginia in these final 2 weeks.
Now, you mentioned how important it is to vote on the first day. That, I'm assuming, carries over, because I saw you doing it in 2022. This is something that we should all be getting used to, right? So we should all be voting the very first day that we're eligible to vote. And then I think it also creates momentum. So if, like, we start seeing, oh, all these people showing up to vote, it inspires other people, and it makes other people want to do it.
The way we talk about it in organizer English is that it creates both a permission structure for people to vote and social pressure on people to vote.
Yeah.
Yes, these early vote windows are a blessing for the Democratic Party, because there are more Democrats in America, but we have more episodic voters. And so turnout really matters to us more. And there's much more variation in turnout in our party traditionally. And so we have this big, powerful new tool that we've never had before to do turnout, which is exactly what you said, is stories and social media, people voting, a huge citizen involvement in our elections. It's very affirming, right? In a time where we're worried about democracy, it's just great to see so many people voting, you know? And so these images of lots of people voting, stories of lots of people voting, create what I call a virtuous cycle of participation. People see others doing it, it puts pressure on them to do it themselves. They do it, and then they tell their friends they've done it. And so if you do vote in Virginia or in any of the other states where there's elections happening now, Ohio and Mississippi and others, please share your I voted sticker, you know, put it on social media, share it with your communities, encourage people to vote. We have to be a vote on day one party, and we have to be a relentless sort of, you know, relational organizing GOTV party. We have to be encouraging all of our networks to vote on day one with us, to vote as soon as possible. This is how we win elections. This is how we've been doing so well in 2022. It's how we've been doing so well in 2023. It's a new tactic for us, and it's powerful, Kimberly. It's a very powerful new tool that we have to sort of drive turnout to the upper end of what's possible for us.
So exciting. I love hearing that. you're talking about that, and now in my mind, I can see all the tweets I'm going to be doing and the promotion for voting on day one, because it's so important. So thank you for reminding me of that. And I think that's something I want to continue to push. Now, the other thing I want to ask you is, we're dealing with this craziness and insanity of Speaker of the House. And I don't know exactly. This is what I know. I've been working all morning, so I've kind of been paying attention. Correct me if I'm wrong. So I believe that Jordan is not going to hold a third vote. And then he called for, I can't remember the dude's name, to be the speaker in the interim. Is that correct? Do I have that correct?
Patrick McHenry.
Yes.
We'll see if that happens. I mean, the interesting question will be is, can they deliver the votes on their own, or are they going to have to get Democratic votes? Will, you know, the MAGA wing, the Matt Gaetz wing, will they go along with this? Or are they going to force them to go over and get Democratic votes to get it through? And then if they ask for Democratic votes, what do we get in return? Look, the thing for your listeners to realize is that the House wasn't really constructed in the way that people understand. The House, like, you know, there are many things the Founding Fathers got right. They didn't get everything right, right? It's not surprising. The House is kind of an odd body in the sense that you have to have 218 in order for it to function. You have to have a majority of the vote for it to actually function at all. And nobody has 218 and won't have 218 until the next Congress, because there's somewhere between 20 or 40 or 60 or 80 or 90 you know, MAGAs and various degree of MAGAnists, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's the establishment Republican Party, and then there's the Democratic Party. And nobody's going to have 218 until January of 2025, because basically the Republican Party is splintered. And what that means is that it's a little bit hard to understand how this is all going to work for the next year and a, you know, 14, 15, 17 months, whatever it is. Even, you know, the Speaker pro tem position, they're having to take a vote. Somebody's got to get to 218 to give the Speaker pro tem these additional powers just to pass simple legislation. But then even passing simple legislation gets really complicated because the Republicans don't have 218 for continuing resolutions or for anything else. So I don't really know how this is going to work. And it's not the case that, well, Democrats should just come in and help them and bail them out, right? Their dysfunction, because what we're going to be doing if we do that is we're going to be creating a false impression that the Republicans are actually moderating and are actually willing to work to with Democrats on areas of national interest. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. They're not willing to negotiate. There was no negotiation in the last continuing resolution. McCarthy didn't negotiate with Jeffries on the debt ceiling. And it's very critical that Democrats don't get bullied or lulled into doing something that puts lipstick on the MAGA pig, right, for the voters and makes them look more moderate and reasonable than they really are out of desperation to make the country not go off the cliff. And so in essence, what's happening is this MAGA wing of the Republican Party is holding the Congress hostage. And they're killing the hostages. And, you know, it's and so I don't this is going to be very this is not there is no simple, easy solution here. Because even if Jeffries somehow were to become Speaker, he still only has 213. And unless there was a significant changing of the rules, that would be sort of unprecedented. You know, he would struggle to get a majority of the vote every time that he needed to get a majority. So this the fact that we did so well in the midterms and you know, we did much better. We basically denied the Republicans ideological control of the House. And now the Republican Party has, you know, splintered into two. And it's a significant development. And I think it's frankly far more structurally grave than people really understand. I mean, I've been here for 30 years. I've worked with people in Congress this whole time. I don't know that there's really a deep understanding of how broken Matt Gaetz is functionally broken the House. You know, Trump and Matt Gaetz have intervened into break in a major American institution. Trump's ally, Tuberville, is trying to break the Pentagon. Trump's ally, Rand Paul, is denied over 60 State Department officials from being nominated, including 38 ambassadors, including many of our ambassadors in the Middle East. It seems to me that there is an organized effort by Trump and his allies to break the United States government right now. And I think it's a serious matter.
Wow. So let me ask you this. I put this out on X or whatever you want to call it. But the idea of, and I don't know if I'm right about this, but this was me trying to be optimistic. So and I put it down as a question to you, like if we get a hard right speaker, how does that play in 2024? And if we get a moderate speaker or somebody like speaker or somebody like Jeffries, how does that play out in 2024? Now, I get what you're saying, that like this is so complicated and weird and different. So we don't know what's going to happen. But my whole thing, I was like trying to find the optimistic angle of same deal with Roe, right? Like, I don't want them to kill Roe, but I see the benefit of them killing Roe because Democrats are going to be more unified. So do you think that if they get like a really hard right speaker, that that would unify Democrats? Or do you think it would just be such a horrible thing to happen that we can't even think about it?
I think that, you know, we've already seen this in some early data that the standing of the Republicans in Congress have taken an enormous hit and have taken an enormous hit with Republicans. And so I think this has already been consequential for 2024 in the House. I mean, they have made themselves look ridiculous, the whole country, partisan, angry, petty, all those things. And so I think, you know, sort of the likely scenario here is that we pass, you know, an annual budget this year. We pass some basic Ukraine, Israel, maybe Taiwan funding. And no other legislation passes, you know, next year at all. And that, you know, we focus on just making sure we get a budget through next year. But it's very possible that what Gaetz did basically was he just basically broke the Congress.
Wow.
And so I think this is going to rebound upon them. Why would you ever vote? If you're a swing voter, why would you ever vote for that party that broke the Congress? Right? Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, they have no argument for re-election next year. Right. Wow. So I think this makes it far more likely the House flips. I think that, you know, the idea that their party is so weak, they can't stand up to extremists. I mean, you know, if they can't stand up to extremists in their own party, then they don't deserve to govern.
Right.
And so it's, I think this has all been very beneficial to us. And look, let me just speak about the election, because there's a Morning Consult poll today that's circulating around. That's the latest poll. It's getting people nervous. There have been lots of good polls. This is not good poll. Mm-hmm. It's very early. Things are very soft. Mm-hmm. You know, the Republican coalition has congealed and come together. Our coalition is still spaced out and not focused on the election, because we haven't had an election. There's no actual election happening in our side. So where things are in most polling is things are within margin of error. They're close. The Republican coalition has come together. Ours hasn't. So when ours comes together, Biden will probably gain another 2, 3, 4 points. That's why things being even today is okay with me. I mean, I think we'll pick up. You know, we will gain ground over the next 6 months as our coalition starts to wake up. And I think that that's not going to really happen until like February, March, April of next year, which means we could be in a run of polling that doesn't feel comfortable for us, but I don't know that it really matters. And then finally, you know, I still believe as a strategist, right, as somebody who's like a chess player, when you move all the pieces on the board over the next 14 months, our pieces are Joe Biden's been a good president. The country's better off. He's standing up to democracy all around the world in a time of crisis. He's worked with Republicans to pass bipartisan legislation. He's made far-sighted investments in the future of the country that will create prosperity for 20 to 30 years. And our party keeps winning elections, and we're strong and united. And what are they? Right? They're Trump. And trials and betraying the country and insurrection and, you know, sexually abusing women and getting caught for it. They're the biggest mess that we've ever seen in the history of the country. And my view is that as a political strategist, we have more ammunition to argue to swing voters that they're out of the mainstream and dangerous than any party's ever had in modern history.
Yeah.
And so we should be able to, given the way the table is set, we should be able to win this election. And I hope win it by a lot so that it looks like a repudiation of MAGA.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about any of this. I'm not worried about any of this. I'm not surprised with any of this polling data. I think the most important thing is Biden's raising money. We keep winning elections. He's been a good president. I think, you know, we have a speech tonight that he's going to be speaking to the nation. We need, you know, this is a critical moment in his presidency. And as I like to say, you know, in every way possible, as we head into 2024, I would much rather be us than them.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this message. Hey, this is Kimberly dropping in real quick. Are you a Patreon subscriber? If not, just go to patreon.com/startmeup. You'll see all the tiers. It's a great way to support the show. Thank you so much.
Join me, 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty, on my podcast, My Life of Crime, as I take on true crime investigations like no other. This season, I'm looking into the labyrinth of crime and secrets within families. I'm cutting straight to the evidence and talking to the people directly involved, including investigators and the families of victims. Listen to My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, you mentioned, and we keep seeing it, that Democrats are overperforming. Yet when you listen to the media a lot of the time, you're basically hearing another story. And so I think a lot of voters are kind of up on this, but I don't know that all of them are. And so what advice do you have to stay sane and to keep it all real?
It's a great question. It's a great question. I think that what's happened, I've really thought about this a lot, and I just did an interview with Tom Bonnier last week where we caught up, and you can come to Hopium and hear us talking about all this for an hour. As you know, we hadn't been together in a while, and we sort of reflected on all this, is that I think there's a whole sort of an industry around interpreting polls that is in trouble right now because the polls, for reasons that we don't have time to get into today, have become a little bit less reliable. Their, you know, response rates have gone down, so it's gotten more expensive to do high quality polls, and so there's more junky polling, and you know, and it's a very diverse and complicated country. It's not easy to poll. Polling is hard anyway, right? So this whole like complex of people who make their living over interpreting polls, what Tom and I did is we said, look, there's also all this other data we can use to see where things are outside of polling that may actually present a more holistic and complete picture. And when we got attacked last year, you know, in our, you know, when we were doing our work, we were attacked in part because we were using this other data of voter registration data, fundraising data, you know, other indications of intensity, the early vote data, special elections, right? And we were told by all these smart people that have built their businesses around interpreting polling that the way we were using this data was illegitimate. It was wrong. It was hopium, you know, it was full of hope and delusional, right? That we were kind of one of the most important political analysts in the country described my work as astrology, like literally claimed I was doing astrology, you know, like tarot cards, right? And so, sorry, my dog is barking.
That's okay. Hi, doggy.
And so he doesn't like it sometimes when I talk to people and I'm not talking to him, right? And so, I think part of what happened in 2022 is that Tom and I said, there's a lot of this other data that exists outside of polling that is legitimate that we have to look at, and it creates a more holistic picture, you know, voter registration data and fundraising data and early vote data, special election data. But the system has continued to stay sort of loyal to polling because that's what people know. That's what these analysts have used. But polling, what Tom and I did, and I think the threat we represented to the system was that we argued that there's all this other data we have to be looking at too that is equally as important as polling in order to get a complete picture. And so, for example, this year, polling's been mediocre for Democrats, but what matters is how people are voting. And in elections all across the country, we're just like in 2022, we're doing far better than the polling was indicating, right? We're 8 points ahead in over 27 House and Senate special elections. We're running 8 points ahead on average of 2020. That's an extraordinary performance. Yeah. We won in Wisconsin. We won in Jacksonville. We won in Ohio by huge margins, right? And so when it matters, and so I think that the ability of polling to describe accurately what's happening in American politics has become harder. And yet the system of analysts are digging in and trying to argue that this is still the most, you know, accurate way of looking at American politics. And I just disagree with that. I mean, I think the way that people are voting again this year, we had the same thing. Like we had mediocre or even bad polling in 2022, and then we did much better than everybody expected. The same thing's happening now. And you know, we have mediocre, bad polling, and yet we keep winning elections all across the country, including in red places that nobody thought we were gonna win. What would you rather be? Would you rather be ahead in the polls or ahead with voters?
Exactly.
Right? And so, I think that what I've been surprised by is the political commentariat class has not evolved to allow there to be this other data to be equal of import. And so, you know, Tom and I and the work we do still represents, you know, a challenge to the system. And we've been right and they've been wrong. And hopefully for all of your listeners, I mean, the point is that you can never get freaked out about a single poll. It's about trends and it's early and it's margin. And remember, you know, let me just give you one example, right? So if in the Morning Consult poll today, for example, came out and showed that we're down 2 points in Pennsylvania to Trump, if the margin of error in that poll is 4%, which means that we could actually be up by 2 points.
Oh, interesting.
Right. And so part of what we have to get out of our head is that these polling is not nearly as accurate or predictive as has been represented. Polling is a snapshot in time. It can't predict anything. It just tells you where things are today. Tomorrow's going to be a new day. Everything could change. Right. And so it's, first of all, it's not predictive. And second of all, it's you know, it's not as accurate. The way I describe it is that it's more like a sketch than a full-on painting, mm-hmm. right? And so what the Pennsylvania poll told us wasn't that Trump was ahead. It just showed that it was close, mm-hmm. right? But the way it gets interpreted is that Trump is beating Biden by two. But margin of error tells you that that's, you can't actually really say that because there's a, mm-hmm. you know, Biden could be up by two, right? right? Because of the nature of the math. And so we have to break ourselves of the tyranny of sort of these polling based commentators who I think are misrepresenting in some ways the level of both predictive capacity and accuracy of polling. And that's what Tom and I have been working to do over the last year and a half, to sort of right the ship a little bit and right. say that we're spending too much time with this bit of data. There's all this other data we also have to look at. And this data over here looks a lot better for us. I mean, Biden, for example, has a massive fundraising advantage mm-hmm. now over Trump. You know, that really matters.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And it's also the fact that Trump is raising money and not giving it to Republicans. He's using it for his own legal fees and everything. And so money's not going into the Republican Party.
I'm glad you raised that because it's amazing how little that's been in the commentary about the money, because he has at least, you know, $50 to $100 million of legal bills next year, right? And so that means that, like, that's, you know, that's two states or a state, you know, where
right,
we,
yeah.
I mean, it's his legal challenges and the money that he's amazingly spending out of his campaign and not out of his own pocket is an enormous challenge for Republicans. I mean, it's a big deal. It's a huge, it's a political burden and it's a financial burden
yeah.
for them.
Wow, and good, and they deserve it.
And they deserve every penny
yeah,
of it.
Let me ask you this, because I was wondering about this when you were talking about polling, and I, you know, this is absolutely not my area. So, how much has polling changed since cell phones, and how is it affecting what we learn with all these, you know, there's all these new voters and young people who are thankfully very engaged. And so do you think that they are part of the equation? Are they being called? I mean, or do they even answer? What's the deal
yeah,
with that?
Yeah, I mean, what's happening is the way to think about this is that that polling has gotten much harder because response rates mm-hmm. have gone down.
Yeah,
so to
yeah.
get a high quality poll, it costs a lot more money.
Right.
And so guess what? You have less high quality polls,
yeah.
right? I mean, it's sort of a very simple math thing. And you're getting more junky polls or lower sample polls or polls that have to do what's called weighting, where they had one subgroup didn't come in, so they had to sort of guess a little bit. I mean, there's sort of the secret sauce that goes into mm-hmm. making polling. And so, yeah, developing a highly, you know, a good sample that captures the electorate well has gotten much harder and much more expensive. And so it means, and the other thing that's happened is there's been a huge growth in Republican polling. There's a big chunk of money now,
yeah.
You know, going into producing polls, Rasmussen, you know, all these polls by Republican firms that are in, you know, going into the averages. So it used to be that, let's say there would be, you know, in a given month, there would be two media polls, you know, or let's say three media polls, one Democratic poll, one Republican poll. You know, now it's, you know, three media polls, three Republican polls, one Democratic poll. Mm-hmm. And so there's much more Republican data in the system than there mm-hmm. used to be, which is a problem. And then the other thing is that because the polls are expensive, we're getting more polls of lower sample size, which makes them less accurate, right? And mm-hmm. So there's the central thing that's happened to polling is that the response rates of people has gone down. And so it's made the accuracy of polling, it's diminished the accuracy
right.
of polling. And that's just a reality we're living in, which we all have to, I wish the people who did the analysis of all this stuff were more honest about this. Mm-hmm. If you want to read a great story about this, the New York Times, if you have a subscription to the New York Times, had a piece that ran on Christmas Day that I'm heavily quoted in, Tom's quoted in, about this very issue, about how did the red wave happen? You know, what really happened with the red wave? And where the Times does a very good job at explaining about this problem with more expensive polling and how it's leading to there being more junky, less accurate polling. Hmm. It's just that no one's admitting that, right? So we're still being told that this is still kind of the same way. And that's what I'm saying, is that, like, Tom and I in part are trying to dethrone the primacy of polling a little bit, because it's just not as descriptive or as accurate as it used to be. And we have to stop pretending otherwise.
Yeah. All right. I have two more questions for you.
Fire away.
This one I worry about. So I want to know what you have to think. What are your thoughts? First of all, we found out Cornel West, who is running as an independent, is accepting money from Harlan Crow and that far right wing guy who is paying our Supreme Court justices. And then, you know, of course, there's RFK Jr. There's a lot of, you know, like chatter out there that RFK is really going to hurt Trump more than Biden. But these two particular men running as independents, how do you think that plays out for 2024?
I don't think we know yet. And I think what the answer to both is, we have to build up Joe Biden and the Democrats. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stronger Biden is, the less they matter.
Right.
You know, so far, you know, in the poll that I have, you know, wrote about today or yesterday, Kennedy, I mean, in the, it was the first major poll, you know, Trump, Biden was up 2 without Kennedy, and then he was up 7 with Kennedy. So in this poll, yeah. So in this poll, Kennedy was taking much more from Trump. And,
Interesting.
I think the critical thing to recognize when you think about third party is that there has been one successful sort of rogue party, splinter party, third party movement in America. It's called the Never MAGAs, right? Never Trumpers.
Right, yes.
They played a major role in helping elect Democrats. Mm-hmm. In 2022 and 2020. And so there's already an established, mature, muscular movement sitting there helping us get elected, mm-hmm. pulling Republicans away from Trump and giving them to us, mm-hmm. right? And so that's terrifying. If you want to talk about the third party, rogue party, splinter party stuff, you have to start with Liz Cheney and Bill Kristol,
right, yeah.
because they've proven to be successful in creating, you know, yielding us, bringing midwifing Republicans into our coalition. It may not be permanent, it may, mm-hmm. but we'll take it for now.
Right, yeah.
The question is, where does Kennedy go in that space? And the reason I raise this is that the Republican coalition, as we were describing earlier with MAGA, has already splintered. Our coalition is not splintered. Mm-hmm. Biden has no challenge. There is no sort of ideological challenge to Biden. The concerns about him have to do more with age mm-hmm. than with sort of his positioning. And so our coalition isn't going to split. And so how much vote is there really available to anybody else? And I just don't know the answer to that. It's yeah. why, you know, I will tell you, I've been very cautious about this. But when the No Labels thing began, I kept saying, look, there's a real chance that any kind of centrist movement is going to take away more from Republicans mm-hmm. than from Democrats, because I don't think there's a lot of vote for Biden to give up. Mm-hmm. Whereas Trump, there's a lot of vote for Trump to give mm-hmm. up. There are a yeah. lot of Republicans. I mean, Ron Brownstein estimates in his writing that about 80% of Republicans are MAGA, but 20% aren't.
Right.
And if even 10% of that 20% go to us, they're dead.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're in a far more, it is far more likely that a rogue party, splinter party movement ends up helping us than it does hurting us. Hmm. And that's because of the specific examples of this election. Now, how does Cornel West gain traction? I mean, the reason why I'm not as worried about Kennedy and Cornel West as many others is that they're terrible candidates. They're
they
terrible.
Are, yeah.
They're terrible. I mean, Cornel West is crazy looking and is like, speaks, you know, he's got crazy positions. He's back in Russia. You know, like, he's not going to sell. He's not an easy sell to voters.
No.
And Kennedy is also not an easy sell, no. right? And so could there have been a third-party candidate? I mean, I think part of what made Jill Stein, you know, effective was that she wasn't scary, right? She
yeah.
wasn't wild. You know, she
right.
looked like a suburban mom and, mm-hmm. you know, and she, you know, so she was kind of docile. Mm-hmm. And so she just filled the, you know, the vessel, right? The vessel got filled. Cornel West and Robert Kennedy are not docile. They're not,
no,
they're
not
user friendly. They're not attractive candidates.
Yeah.
And so I think we can't, what I say to groups when I speak to them is, don't give people power they don't have themselves.
Yes.
Make Robert Kennedy and Cornel West earn our fear.
Right.
As opposed to give them power that they've not earned.
God.
We need to be spending in these final next 13 months, right? We need to be talking about us much more than we talk about them. We talk about them too much. You know, I say to my Hopium members that 2/3 of our public communication should be positive.
Yes.
1/3 and about us. and one third should be about them.
Yeah.
But I don't ever want to see another tweet about Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? I mean, we all know who she is. I mean, we spent too much time talking about all the crazy people. We need to be spending more time talking about the good works of Joe Biden and Democrats. And so it's not that we don't pay attention to them, but we can't, it's like rubbernecking, right? It's like when an accident happens, everybody slows down. We spend too much time looking at the train wreck and not enough about the beautiful train station that we're coming into, whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
And so I think that I'm not as worried about all this as many are. And because I think that could a third party candidate have emerged that would have been really dangerous for us? Yes. Have they? I'm not sure they have.
Well, I feel better now. And you're absolutely right about not just giving them that power, that they have to earn it. So thank you for that. I'm going to use it. I'm going to use a lot of stuff you said today. So I'm just stealing from you blatantly.
Go for it. We're all in this together. You know, we're all a big, happy, dysfunctional family together.
And then, I mean, this whole show is kind of an answer to that question, but maybe you can just like put it all together in a fun little package that what do we have to be hopeful about?
Well, Joe Biden's been a good president.
Yes,
the country is better off. We keep winning elections all over across the country. The Democratic Party is very strong. And, you know, they're just way too crazy. And I think voters know it. And so my hope is that we don't just win next year, but that we win by a lot. And that the message of the election is a huge, clear repudiation of MAGA and the direction the Republican Party has gone in. That's what we have to hope for, and that's what we have to work for. I mean, I use the term hopium, and to me, what hopium is hope with a plan, right?
Right.
It's not just that we want the election or hope the election will be better. We're going to do the work to make it so, and that we have more power and agency over our future and our destiny than we understand.
Yeah.
I think that's what we did in 2022. I think millions of people just said, I'm not going to let my democracy slip away. And they went to work and they created an amazing election that nobody thought was possible. You know, we have to do it again. We've been doing it all year. We need to do it in Virginia in a few weeks. We need to do it, you know, all across the country next year. And because the threat is real. I mean, I give Joe Biden a lot of credit. I mean, he gave a speech in Democracy a few weeks ago where he said in perhaps the most stark and blunt ways that, you know, MAGA has become a threat to our democracy, perhaps unprecedented threat to our democracy and to our country and our history. And so it means that for all of you who are listening today, you know, if there was ever a time in your life to donate money or volunteer in a campaign or write postcards or canvas or text or phone, it's now. I mean, it's time is now. I mean, history is calling us and we've risen to the occasion, but we've got to keep doing it because, you know, if American democracy were to falter, it would be a tragedy, not just for this country, but for the whole world.
For the whole world.
And you know, so the stakes are high. We're doing well. Got to keep our heads down, keep doing the work. And, you know, hopefully we'll have a good election in November in Virginia and elsewhere.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks for the advice. Like I said, I'm going to be tweeting out some of your ideas and stuff like that. But of course, I just love when you're on. You always make me feel better. And I know you make my listeners feel better. And you're informative. So it's like, even if there's some scary news out there, at least we have the tools to like figure it out. So thank you for that. And before I let you go, please tell everybody where to find you.
Yeah, I mean, the primary way to find me is at Hopium Chronicles. It's a site, you know, on the Substack platform. It's a website basically with an email newsletter. And it has a very robust community. I mean, we have tens of thousands of people there now and people, you know, work together on projects and they learn how to, you know, for example, I did a thread a few weeks ago and I said, what are people doing in Virginia? And hundreds of people told the story of what they were doing to encourage others to, you know, I was calling with Sister District or I was phoning with this group or texting with this group. So people come to our community to do what you said, Kimberly, which is not to dwell in the scary stuff, but to take the anxiety that we all have and channel it into concrete action, right? Which is the most healthy way to manage this moment. It's why I'm doing it myself, frankly, through this work. I have tons of anxiety about where we are, but I'm living in the place of, okay, I'm anxious. What am I going to do about it?
Right.
And then I'm also on, I still call it Twitter, at Simon WDC. I'm not going to call it X. It's ridiculous. And, but my primary place, I'm also aware that, you know, we are in the end days of X. I mean, it's at some point it is going to stop and it is not going to be there for us forever. And we have to make, that's why I've built this other alternative community around a very powerful platform that I think is going to be a bigger part of our future going forward. Very respectful to readers. You know, there's no, you know, there's no negative comments. Right. I mean, it's just, it's a healthy, happy, you know, space. And I really thank the Substack team for giving us such a powerful platform to do the work that we need to do.
Very cool. Well, I mean, I have your phone number, so I'm not going to lose touch with you completely, but I definitely want to keep you close. So everybody should go join.
Reach out whenever you want. You know, you're one of my favorites. Aww. And I really appreciate what you do and your attitude and your fight and your, you know, your grit and all that. And so just whenever you need me, just give me a call.
I will. And thank you. And, you know, you can find me on Twitter at Author Kimberly, and then my pinned tweet has all the info until Twitter's gone. But Simon, thank you so much again.
Thanks, Kimberly.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.